At any given moment in the United States, approximately 400,000 children are living without permanent families in the foster care system. How can we connect with and nurture those at-risk children? How can we connect with and support the families caring for them? Welcome to Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones, Executive Director at SCAN of Northern Virginia, and my guests today are Elizabeth Buckles and Leslie Perez with United Methodist Family Services, a nonprofit that, among other many services, recruits, trains, and supports hundreds of foster families in our area. Today, we'll discuss the system of foster care and a new approach that UMFS is using called collaborative problem solving. This approach can be useful for all families, not just those in the foster care system, as they raise and nurture their children. So Leslie, let's start with just an overview of sort of the state of the foster care system today.
Well, as you mentioned, over 400,000 children nationwide are involved in the foster care system. In Northern Virginia, specifically, there are about 1,200 to 1,300 children involved in the foster care system. Not all are living in a foster family. Some may be in a residential treatment facility to address some of their own emotional difficulties. Some may be living with relatives or even be with birth family but get home base or services in the home. At UMFS, we are currently serving over 200 children throughout Virginia involved in the foster care system.
What are some of the key challenges that you see the system sort of wrestling with these days?
Well, because you can be in foster care in Virginia up through the age of 18 or 21, the largest challenge is the older youth. A lot of families are willing to work with the babies, mm-hmm. Whether that is to foster, to adopt, or even foster to reunify. Oftentimes families, have difficulty. Adolescence is hard enough. However, for kids who've experienced abuse or neglect, the challenge of growth is infinitely more difficult.
And so, real quickly, what are you looking for in terms of who can be a foster parent? What are you looking for in foster parents?
Well, you can be married, you can be single, you can own or rent. We have diverse ethnicities, a race, or even religions. You can have parented and you cannot have parented. There are some basic requirements as far as background clearances and things, health, physical, as well as your own emotional health and stability, and really a willingness to foster, to nurture, to raise a child and be respectful of the family from which they came.
And you mentioned that these children who enter the foster care system obviously often have not had necessarily the most positive previous experiences. And so it can bring some conflicts into that family. And Elizabeth, you all have been adopting a new approach called collaborative problem solving that helps whether it's parents or foster parents raising children or even in your residential session. Residential settings. So tell us more about collaborative problem solving.
So collaborative problem solving is a unique approach to working with kids. It looks at kids' struggles a little bit differently. Instead of just focusing on the behaviors, which we obviously want to stop, it really focuses on the skills that are underneath those behaviors and what skills the kids are lagging in order to meet the challenges of just dealing with some everyday stuff that all kids go through. Recent research has shown that trauma, abuse, and neglect can really change the structure of the brain. So working with these kids is in their behaviors is similar to that of working with a child with a learning disability. A kid who has trouble reading, you would work with them on building the skills necessary to read. So kids who have trouble, tolerating frustration, you're going to work on the skills that they need to be able to tolerate some frustration in small increments and build them up to where they might be able to function in a different way, as opposed to looking solely at the behavior that comes out of that frustration and consequencing the behavior. We're really trying to build the skills necessary to handle some of these difficult situations, because all of our kids that we work with have dealt with some significant abuse and neglect throughout their lives. So it's really important to give them the skills that they need to be successful. And collaborative problem solving really works to build those skills.
So can you give us an example of maybe a problem or a behavior a child might or an adolescent might be sort of demonstrating and what our my gut reaction might be as a caregiver versus what you would recommend I do as a, in this approach.
Right. So it really starts with assessment and figuring out what are those chronic problems, not behaviors, but problems the kid is having difficulty handling, and then addressing those problems individually. So say a kid is, and this might not be, you want to build some confidence, so you might not necessarily tackle the biggest problems first, but say a kid is having trouble handling hygiene, like taking a shower every day, and you're having major episodes of, you know, trying to get this kid in the shower. So our traditional approach as parents is we would say, if you don't shower, you're not going to get TV time or whatever it might be. But collaborative problem solving really goes to the root of the problem and starts talking to the kid and really understanding where the kid is coming from and why they're not taking a shower. So starting the conversation with, tell me about what's going on with you when we ask you to take a shower, and really getting a good understanding of where the kid is coming from. I think our tendency as helpers and parents is to kind of go in and just solve the problem. But this approach really is retraining the brain and giving them the skills that they need to handle the problem on their own. So you really get a kid's perspective on what's going on with the issue. And then you come in and present the adult concern, which might be, you know, people won't want to be friends with you because you smell bad, and putting it in language the kid is going to understand, or I'm worried about your health because of not showering. It can cause other health problems. So is there something we can do to solve this problem together? And really taking a step back and giving the kid a chance to come up with solutions that address both sets of concerns. And that really is helping the brain kind of structure the nature of a problem and how to go about looking at two sides of an issue, and then teaching the brain how to come up with alternate solutions. And then working through with them kind of, okay, is that solution going to work for you? Is it going to work for me? Is it going to cause any other problems? And can we do it? Is it feasible? And again, walking the kid through all of those steps, so training the brain how to do this on its own in a much faster way. And hopefully multiple, lots and lots of practice will help kids kind of learn how to do this on their own, and build those new pathways in the brain so that they can look at problems a little bit differently, as opposed to acting out in whatever way that's natural for them.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, this is Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quinones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, along with Leslie Perez and Elizabeth Buckles from UMFS. So it strikes me as I listen to you that parents' initial reaction might be, that's going to take a lot longer. And my child, when I ask them what's going on, is going to say nothing, because that's what teenagers say, right? But it also sounds like this is an investment in the long term, right? It's about empowering the child and taking the power struggle out of it, of I'm telling you to do it and you have to because I'm your mom kind of thing, as opposed to sort of engaging the kid. So talk a little bit about the tips you give caregivers on how to get through that nothing stage of really getting the kid to talk and engage in the process.
Yeah, so asking lots of questions and using a lot of reassurance, because kids go into it thinking, you're just going to tell me what to do anyway, and what I say doesn't matter. So saying, you're not in trouble. I really want to understand. I really want to get to the bottom of this. And it doesn't all have to happen in one conversation. You can come back to it. If it's getting too tough or the kid's getting escalated in the context of frustration, you can say, okay, let's come back to this later. And except for those extreme safety issues, trying not to make the kid do whatever it is you want them to do. So if it is showering, maybe you can let it go for a little bit and say, I'm not going to give you a consequence for this. We're really going to try to solve this. So come back to it later and say, you know, I really want us to work on this together. Let's come back and talk about it later. And using some of those questions that bring out more than yes or no answers, and figuring out kind of what those questions are that will help your teen talk through it.
Leslie, being a parent is tough no matter what the circumstances, and parenting a child whose early experiences may have involved neglect, abuse, or other chaotic home experiences can be especially challenging. So how can the rest of us in the community better support the special people who step up as foster parents?
Well, by becoming a foster parent your darn self. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there is a need for foster families. However, Not all of our families do what we call long-term care, so the 6-9 months up to years long, or adopt a child. Sometimes we have a need for respite families who may provide a weekend a month. The certification is the same. You still have to go through the background clearances, the home study approval process. But it definitely supports the long-term families because kids in care can't spend the night at a friend's house. So there aren't those natural breaks for our foster families. But also, by having resource families that can provide respite care, it gives the child assurance because these families have been trained in collaborative problem solving as well. They understand some of the needs that the young people have, again, the experiences that they've had prior to placement, and the expectations as far as nurturing and providing a relationship intended to last a lifetime. I often say that, you know, if the government can ask for 1 week in a month for our reserves, can we have some reserves for our foster families as well?
That's a great analogy and a great idea to plant in the seeds of our listeners. We have just about a minute left. Is there one final message that either of you wanted to leave with our listeners this morning?
I mean, just like the analogy with the learning disability, this stuff takes time, and we can't expect any kid to learn a brand new skill in a week. So just creating that investment in a kid and helping them help their brain, and that they will be successful.
Great food for thought.
And, of course, my encouragement would be to call UMFS up in the Northern Virginia area. It's 703-625-6091. She's awaiting calls of families who are interested in getting involved. And if not you, then who? For those families who live out of the Northern Virginia region, they can go on the website and find out what UMFS office is located near them, because we are throughout Virginia, and call a recruiter today.
Wonderful. The thousands of children in our local foster care programs depend on community members like you and me to connect with them in many different ways, from providing safe foster homes to respite homes to supporting foster care parents and to speaking up on behalf of children at risk for abuse and neglect. It's a complex system that requires support from many, many different sources to best serve the children in our care. Consider how you might be able to connect with foster families to give at-risk children the best possible chance to grow up happy and healthy in our communities. This has been Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, and I want to thank UMFS's Leslie Perez and Elizabeth Buckles for joining me to talk about this very important topic. Remember, kids need connections. We are all responsible for connecting with the children in our communities, and we can each help families thrive. For more information about children in foster care, as well as other parenting challenges, visit the SCAN website at scanva.org.